Good morning. We are on Shmuel Bet, starting Perek Gimel. We left off at the end of Perek Bet, finished last week, discussing how there was a conflict between the men of Ishbosheth on one side and David on the other, where there was bloodshed, and ultimately they went their separate ways. But unfortunately, this battle, which ended at that time, did not end the war, but rather the war continued. Some Mefarshim say for a period of 5 full years. And as we mentioned before, David, after a full 7 years, finally then and only then becomes acknowledged as the true king for all of the Jewish people. Up until this point, he only ruled over a smaller part of southern Israel known as the area of Judah, and Ishbosheth, everything else. But we're going to see in this parak that that doesn't last all that long. Let's begin with Pasuk Aleph. Vatehi hamelchama arucha. There was a very long, lengthy battle. Bein beis Shaul, vein beis David. Between the house of Shaul, of course Shaul passed away, but Ishbosheth, Shaul's son, who was not on the battlefield, who obviously didn't die, according to many, including Avner, at least up until this point, felt that he would be the successor to the throne. But David holich v'chazek, David's side was getting, although it was smaller, it was getting ever so slowly, kept getting bigger and bigger, stronger. V'shol holchim v'dal. However, when it came to the other side of Shaul, though they were large, they continued to get smaller and smaller. Now, dalim really means poor. Besudas Sion just translates it over here as chalushim, weak. According to the interpretation of Besudas David, he adds the word shafelim v'chalushim. They're lowly. They became like a dal, as a poor person, someone who unfortunately doesn't have the financial means, is lowly in spirit, and maybe downtrodden upon by others. So this is how they were viewed upon as the army and the wars continued in years, months and years. David's army continued to grow stronger and the other side weaker. And if we look at the English over here on page 213 on the bottom left, more and more people from among the tribes of Israel began to switch their allegiance to David from Ishbosheth, as we just said. It's interesting that the Kli Yakar points out an interesting language in this pasuk. Holich v'chazek, is that Lashon Rabim or is that Lashon Yachid? Is that singular or plural? Lashon Yachid, singular. So what's the significance of this? So you can learn, not like the Kli Yakar, that it means that there wasn't a huge mass of people that turned to David, but slowly, one by one by one, they became stronger and stronger. The Kli Yakar says that the significance of this pasuk written in Lashon Yachid, singular form, Efshir Sharatza, it's possible that it wants to tell us, Shebebeis David Hayachdus. There was unity. Ki ish echad shekulam hoyim yuchadim achrei David. All of them were united after David. They had the same mission, the same goal. So that's possibly the significance of why it says that by David. And maybe, as we're going to see this more in the psukim coming up, that on the other hand, Shaul, there was not that unity. Maybe there was actually some people that felt they should be in power over Ishbosheth, and therefore maybe the reason why they were on that side was not all for the same reason, which is possibly why they were weakened, because they didn't have the same goal, the same mission. Pasuk Bet. Pasuk, the next psukim tell us David's six children, at least his first six children. The Yavaldu of David Banim Bechevron. We know that David was stationed in Hebron, and there he was once again acknowledged as a king. And he had, at that time, six sons. And now we mention who they were. Vayehi Bechoro, his firstborn son, Amnon. His firstborn son, his name was Amnon. Lachinoam HaYisraelis. We've already came across Achinoam, which is one of his wives. Let's see one more pasuk. Mishnehu, Mesuda Sion translates as Veloshin Shnaim, second son, Kilov. Interesting name. We'll discuss why he's called that, or if that's really his name, or maybe that's another one of his names. Lavigayu. Ashes Naval HaKarmeli. Interesting that still Abigail, who was at one time married to a Menuvel by the name of Naval, a disgusting human being, nonetheless, she's still called Ashes Naval. Naval died some time ago. Nonetheless, it still says it. Right, so he had a second son by the name of Kilov. Vashlishi, and the third son, which is probably the more famous of the three so far, is Avshalom ben Ma'acha bas Talmi Melech Gashur. All right, now let's go into some of these mefarshim, starting off with Rashi. We're going to see half of Rashi, then we're going to go into the Radak. Rashi points out and is fixated on the second kid, Kilov, because we find elsewhere that that's really not the second son of David. Says Rashi, Mishnei Kilov Umakam Acher, another place, Hukar Oso Umishneu Daniel. His second son was not Kilov, but rather was Daniel. So, which one was it? Why is the Nach over here saying that his name was not Daniel, when in fact it was? What's the significance of this name Kilov? So the answer usually is, he had two names. And the significance of a name is not just so you can be called to dinner, but the purpose of a name is it really describes the essence of the human being. If you study the person's name, at least then, that really was the essence of who that person was. And the idea of naming a child and not naming your child a Rasha is for that reason. You wouldn't want the child to emulate such individuals. So Rashi says, Lomanik Rishmo Kilim. So why was his name Kilov? Why, of all names, that? So Om Rabbi Yitzchak. Very interesting that Rabbi Yitzchak answers this, and I'll point out why that's so fascinating, because we'll see another place where Rabbi Yitzchak gives that answer. Shehayu Leitzani Hador Omer. There was the Leitzanin, the scoffers of the generation. What did they say? Menaval Haisa Abigail Uberes. Interesting that Rashi's maybe even jumping all over this pasuk that says that she's called Abigail Eshes Naval. Because what did people say? This child that was Abigail had, the mother, was certainly the mother of Kilov was, or Daniel was Abigail. People were saying, that's not David's kid. That's Naval's son. And again, that's maybe why the pasuk says Ashes Naval, because that's what people were saying, that this is really Abigail and Naval, not Abigail and David's kid. Says Rashi, what did God do? Nefach kalastor v'nedamu l'aviv. That God made his face look exactly like his. Namely, Daniel and David looked like identical twins. Did not look like a father and a son. It looked like two brothers. And we exactly. Very good. Because it was the same thing when it came to Abraham and Yitzchak, that people said that Sarah was Abraham so long, it was Avimelech. Maybe Avimelech was the one that is the father of Yitzchak. And therefore, Hashem purposely made them look exactly the same, so to quiet down individuals. Now, who is Rav Yitzchak? Some actually say Rav Yitzchak was Rashi's father. Because Rashi is an acronym for Rav Shlomo Yitzchaki. Some say that Rashi's father is Rav Yitzchak. So it's interesting over here, Rashi answers this question by quoting Om Rabbi Yitzchak. Some say it's Rashi's father. How do I know that some say it's Rashi's father? There's no real commentaries, so many commentaries on this particular part of Nach, but there are many commentaries on the very first Rashi in the Torah. The very first Rashi in the Torah asks a question, and it's answered. Rashi begins, the very first words of the very first Rashi in the Torah, Bereishis, says, Omer Yitzchak. And some say that Rashi did this on purpose to show kavod to his father. That way, he couldn't have come up with this answer on his own. Rashi was a genius. But he purposely came up, he started off with his father's Devar Torah. And it's interesting that when it came in Parshas Bereishis, his father, let's call him that, Rabbi Yitzchak, asked a different question. He asked, why was it necessary for the Torah to begin with God created the heavens and the earth? If the Torah, in fact, is a book of law that tells us what to do, what not to do, so it makes more sense, as Rashi says there, I'm not going to read it, it should start off with, in Parshat Bo, the very first mitzvah given to the Jewish people of Rosh Chodesh, right? That a person should establish a calendar.
We have to know who is giving. We can't just have laws. We have to know that it's from Hashem.
Exactly. That's what he says. She says, She'im Yomru, Umos Olam Yisrael, because what happens if the nations of the world say, Listim Atem, you're a bunch of thieves. After all, you conquered, you took the land from the seven nations, you just marched into Israel with on the days of Yeshua, and you took over the land, people were dwelling there. And the answer is, God created the heavens and the earth. That Kol Ha'aretz Shel Kodesh Baruch Hu, the entire land belongs to God. Hu Bara V'Nasna L'Asher Yashem E'enav, V'Ritzono Nasna L'Hem, V'Ritzono Natu M'Hem V'Nasna L'Anu. It's God's will, it's His, so He can give it to whoever He pleases. So He gave it to them, and now He removes them from the land and gives it to us. So that's the very first Rashi. So again, it's interesting that it's the exact same answer. It's Rabbi Yitzchak. So what's the connection between that Rabbi Yitzchak and this? And I think there's a more fundamental question. The question I always ask when I read this Rashi, and I say it in a joking way, is why is there such a tremendous conflict in the Middle East? Doesn't make any sense. Some people say that the land does not belong to the Jews. I would just simply go and turn to Abbas, and I would say, I want to share with you this very important Rashi. And the Rashi clearly says, the Rashi in Chumash, that God gave us the land. So can you please stop fighting with us? It's ours. So what's the answer? He's going to say, well, I'm sorry, sir. That's a very nice text you have there, but I don't believe in it. I don't believe in that Rashi. So therefore, what's the purpose of that Rashi? When the nations of the world say, you're thieves, the answer isn't so that we can tell them, no, we're not thieves. It's so that we ourselves should realize that we're not thieves. That we should not believe that we're wrong. We have to understand for ourselves. They're not going to change, but they may negatively influence us. With that said, that's how I understand this Rashi as well. Rashi says, what's the concern? The late Sunni Hador, the scoffers of the generation, would say, ha! That's not David's kid. That's Nabal's kid. Who cares? They're a bunch of idiots. A bunch of late Sunni Hador. And what? Now that they look exactly the same, do you think those people are going to do tshuva? They're going to become righteous individuals to be tzaddikim? They'll still be scoffers. They were scoffers. They'll think of something else to cause problems with. And the answer is, the reason why God made Abraham and Yitzchak, as well as here, David and Daniel, exactly the same, was not to convince the late Sunni Hador, but rather that we should know that they're wrong, that we should know that what they're scoffing about is absolutely true, that they should not have a negative influence on us. And that's how I usually answers a lot of questions, that often we cannot change them, but maybe they will negatively influence us. And that's what it says in the Mishnah Perkei Avos, Dama l'hashiv l'apikoros. You have to know how to answer l'apikoros. Not because the apikoros is going to say, ah, Taki, you're right. They're blinders on their eyes. They're closed-minded. They're not going to listen to what you say. But if you don't know what to answer them, and they have all these beautiful proofs that they've been brainwashed to have to spit out on cue, so then maybe you'll believe that they're right. So therefore, you need to know what to answer l'apikoros. Not for them, but for yourself. Then, with that said, let's look for a moment at the Radak, which really is even more elaborate over here. We did stop in the middle of this Rashi. But the Radak says the significance of this name, and again, he gives the same answer, but he uses a little more detail. Kilav says the Radak, it was Sefer Divrei Yomim, and it says in Chronicles that his name was Daniel, Daniel. Shnei Shemos Hayulo. He really had two names, Ukamo Rabin Baksuv. And this is how it's mentioned often, the Yeshbo Drash, and we can darshan here as follows. First wide line. Hilafi Shalokach David Abigail Achar Mos Naval. That after David took Abigail, after Naval died, in fact, you can even say they waited for 3 months. That Mefarshim, as we saw over there, he didn't just marry her immediately after he died, but rather he waited for the period of 3 months so that no one would think that in fact it was going to be if she becomes pregnant from Naval. So by waiting 3 months and seeing that she was not pregnant, then getting married would be a clear indicator that it was not from Naval. But of course, people could conveniently forget that information. Says the Radak, Hayu Omrim, people said, Kimuberis Hayisim Naval. Ah, she had this child from Naval. Vezeh Haben Sheol the Abigail David Hayu Beno Shel Naval. This child that was born to Abigail in David's, where David is now, in Hebron, that's really Naval's son. Lafikach, therefore, Yatsa Klaster Panav, therefore they looked, their face, his appearance was Kiklaster Panav Shel David, just like his father's face. Lohaster Hachshad, to remove such suspect, remove such doubt. Lafikach, therefore, says the Radak, Karu Kilov, very interesting. I tried to underline the next two words as well as I could. Why is he called Kilov? Because Kilov is a break of two words. Kulo Av. This guy is all dad. Right? It's all from his father. Kolomar Bichol Sarosav Domel Aviv. In all ways, that's his father. You cannot deny that Daniel is his father, Kol Av. He looks and acts in every single fashion exactly like his real father, like David. Daniel Hayashmo Ha'ikar. Daniel, in fact, was his initial name. Yomer David, Danani Kael Minaval. Because the word Daniel is also a break of two words. Danani Kael, which means God has judged me favorably from Naval, so that people should no longer think that this is my child. So both of them have the same idea that he was concerned about the perception of others. So that was the second child, the child by the name of Kilov, or possibly of Daniel. Now the third child, which we also saw in this Pasuk, Pasuk Gimel, is also not such a simple one. The third child, Avshalom, who of course will cause tremendous, tremendous problems for David, as we'll see later on in our Sefer Shmuel Bet. Ultimately, Avshalom not having such a good day, dying. But nonetheless, David running away from Avshalom, not just running away from, in Shmuel Aleph, running away from Shaul, now he is to eventually be running away from his own son. It's interesting also that there was something unique about him. So now we're going to go back into Rashi. Rashi says, actually, I apologize, we're not up to him, but we are in the middle of this Rashi. Rashi says, Rabbi Senu Amru, that our rabbis tell us, Shoyim Kalam Pnei Mipi Boshes Bahalacha, that the reason why he was called Kilov was because he used to embarrass the face of Mipi Boshes and Halacha. Now again, we're not talking about Avshalom yet, we're still talking about, for one more moment, Kilov. Kilov, in addition to the interpretation of the Radak, means cool of, also means embarrassment. Because what happened was David had a teacher, and the teacher's name was Mipi Boshes, interesting name, but nonetheless, that was the name of David's teacher, and he used to always humiliate David. He used to ask him questions in public in a fashion that he knew that David could not answer him, and it would be very embarrassing to David. But nonetheless, David was such a great man, even though he was a very powerful man, he could have easily probably just killed him for embarrassing him, except he was makabalit. He accepted what he had to say, but it was still with a level of embarrassment. But because he was able to accept Torah from someone above him, and he humbled himself, he merited a son who was even greater than his own teacher, so much so that he had the potential of embarrassing his teacher. Not that it's something to be proud of. A person who's malvin pnei chaver v'rabin is ein l'chel kol habu. You're not allowed to embarrass a person.
He knew so much Torah that itself was an embarrassment to the teacher. Not that he
right.
embarrassed him, but if there was a question, he knew how to answer it.
Right.
Maybe the teacher didn't.
Right.
So that's
right. That's very good. Now, Before we go back into the Radak, let's look in the English on page 213. It says, so righteous, is actually quoting the Gemara in Shabbos, was Kalev, that the sages, the Chazal, list him as one of only four people who never committed a sin. He spent his time studying Torah and had no interest in succeeding his father David as king. So he was one of only four great, great people who, as Chazal tell us, never committed a sin. It's very bizarre. The four, which you can think about, one is this guy, Kilov. The other one is what?
Yishai.
Another one is Amram. And the other one is Binyamin. So all of them have in common that they are the child of, or the father of, someone who's incredible. It doesn't say Moshe. It says Moshe's father, Amram. It doesn't say David. It says Yishai. What?
He had a father and a son, David.
Right. He had, on both ends, he had the father and the son were on this level. Binyamin, of course, he had Yosef, right? But it doesn't mention these people as his brother.
His brother. I'm saying,
but it doesn't even mention him. I should have said Yaakov. It doesn't mention them. But for some reason, that's what Chazal say, that they died sinless. That's how great Kilov was, that he never committed a sin. Okay, now let's go into the Radak. Now we're going to see about Avshalom, something which is an important idea of who Avshalom was, and we'll have a little bit of an understanding of who he was when we see him in greater detail later on, not in this parak. Says the Radak, the third wide line, Avshalom ben Macha, Darshubo, it's darshined in Parshas Ki Tetze, where it discusses this whole Parsha, Ki Lefi Shehoyu ben Yefas Toar, that Avshalom was a ben, a son from a Yefas Toar, from a beautiful woman. But a Yefas Toar is someone, as Radak helps us out with, Shelocha Davin Memulchama, that she was taken from war from David. That the Torah says in the beginning of Parshat Ki Tetze, a very fascinating law, that Ki Tetze B'Melchama Aleivecha, that when you go out to war against your enemies, your adversaries, and V'Ra'isa Yifat Torah, you find among your captives a beautiful woman, she's not Jewish, you're allowed to take her, and going through a certain procedure, you're allowed to marry her. For 30 days, she's in your house, her hair has to grow, her nails, the whole thing. She's, even though she's, yeah, it doesn't stipulate exactly who it is. It's a non, it has to be a milchamat reshut. It's not someone from a molek or someone. Someone that is an optional war. It's not a mitzvah war. That's an ancient yifat toar. That the Torah says, lo dibra Torah el kenegid yitzahara. Because a person is on the battlefield where there's violence, and all bets are off, there's no normal laws that a person who has on a typical day walking in the street, but when you're in war and you're shooting and killing, so there your level of your ability to control your Yitzhara is certainly lessened, to the point that Chazal, the Torah, allows you to take this woman, even though she's not Jew, but she converts. But this happens against her will. But eventually, after the 30 days, she can stay or she can leave. She wishes to stay, kol kavod, and she's a full-fledged wife. But the Torah tells us, interestingly, after the Eshet Yifat Toar, it talks about that you have two wives, one you love and one you hate. And it says that when you marry an Eshet Yifat Toar, the end result will be you'll end up hating her. And then the next part of Parshas Ki Tetze says, and the reason why I'm saying all this, the next part, there's three sections in the first Aliyah, is about a ben Sora Mora, a rebellious and wayward son. And it's Rashi over there beautifully says that it's a direct relationship. If you marry an Eshet Yifat Toar, you'll hate her, and you'll end up having a rebellious son. And it's logical, because if you marry someone only for looks, looks come and go. But then the personality, unfortunately, which you didn't care about, will rear its ugly head. And of course, she is going to be raising this child, which will not necessarily be in line with your hashkafot, your philosophy in life. Obviously, that child is going to go and rebel because they're getting mixed messages at home.
Certainly happened here.
With Avshalom. Exactly, that's why I'm saying, right. So let's finish up this Radha.
Never a Sora Mora?
What?
Didn't it say that there was never a Sora Mora?
Correct. But the idea of a rebellious, there was never a Ben Sora Mora that was actually that was killed.
It had to
have witnesses, so many exact details for it to happen. But the idea of having a rebellious son, that I know has happened before.
Yeah.
More than once. Yes. Lafikov, therefore, let's see this Radak. Hoyav Shalom Sora Morib Aviv. This is the reason why, which is just a chain of events, that this child became rebellious. Because he originated that his mom was a Yifas Toar. Lakach Nismuch, here he helps us out. Nismuch of Parshas Sora Morib with Parshas Yifas Toar. That's the juxtaposition of those two Parshio in Kitetze. Lo Merucha, to tell you, Kol Noso, son who marries O Isha She'enu Haguna, either her or someone who's really not proper, Yotz Mimeno Ben Sar Mora. And I always say that the reason why you have all these Chazal, it's not some punishment, it's not some magic trick, it's just a natural set of events. That's what ends up happening, that if you do not marry someone who is really in line of your way of thinking, your child's going to rebel you because he gets mixed messages at home. But Nachon who hadrash, this is good. Kimi acher shehi shibuya, because after she's been held in captivity, she was on your enemy's side. Harihi kemuchrach lashuv ladas Yisrael. She was forced because otherwise she would be just a POW, so therefore she had no choice but to join you. It's something which she really wanted, so therefore the whole marriage didn't start off on the right foot to begin with. So you can imagine that the relationship is going to go sour, go south quite fast.
I don't get the idea that he can marry anybody who he conquered. If we have specifically, we're told not to marry Isha Mitzri, or Knanit, and so on. So how is this taking a Shvuya makes it okay for him to marry her?
The way the delicate way of me saying it is because the words of Chazal is Lo Dibra Torah Elo Kenegid Yetzahara, which there's in greater length has a different meaning, but the simple meaning means that we will never be given a mitzvah or told, you must do this, you must not do that, if it's impossible for you to do or not to do. God only gives us things that we could possibly do. If there's a mitzvah which is just beyond our ability, then God would never have given us that because He's not going to give us something which we are going to fail. Right? He's not going to set us up to fail. So when it comes to, on a typical day, don't marry her, don't marry him. Okay, I'll buy that. Maybe hard, maybe difficult, I may want to, I may not want to, but that's the law. We can try. You try our best. When a man is on the battlefield, and all bets are off, and he's shooting his guns, and there's murder and bloodshed, and who knows what craziness goes on. There's plundering, there's theft. All bets are off. So there, for the Torah to say, you see a beautiful woman in which the Torah says you desire her, so the Torah to say, no, you're not allowed to take her, what's going to end up happening? You'll break the law. You'll break the Torah. So therefore, the Torah says, this is allowed. This is allowed.
The same goes with Shalal, taking Shalal in case of war.
This is...
But most of the time, you're allowed to take Shalal. It's very unusual that you need it. Very unusual. Like, you aren't allowed with Amalek. Most of the time, you can.
So the other way, though, just to go another step, because you didn't buy it, is like this. There's a dispute if you are allowed to have relations with this Eishes Yifat Toar right then and there, or you have to go through this entire procedure. So let's say, according to the opinion, that you have to wait for the entire 30 days.
Is that also in case she's pregnant with her husband? Maybe that's part of the 30 days also.
Could be. I don't know.
She might have been...
Maybe. Could be. So according to... let's say you have to wait, right? And the Torah says you have to make her you have to go this procedure, which she loses her beauty. Right. So what ends up happening, if the Torah would say, this is how my Rosh Hashiva Rabbi Zoi explains it. If the Torah would say, no, 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 you can't do it, you'll do it. But the Torah says, yes, you can. But in order for you to do this, you must first take her to your home, you must make her look ugly, and 30 days later, and then what will happen after those 30 days? And say, you know what? It's not worth it anymore. It's not worth it.
But 30 days, you know, like 60 years. That don't mean 30 days.
We're not talking about Israel.
Correct.
About
the Torah permits it. The Torah does allow it. On the other hand, David, you're right. What happened to David? He ended up producing enough Shalom.
What happened to Shlomo?
Yeah, but Shlomo, but I realized though, Bathsheba was not taken in captivity.
Shlomo, the king.
He had what?
With all the
but I was thinking Shlomo was not then so
early. So, all right. We started very late, but we're going to see two more psukim, if that's okay. All right.
Better than you did on Thursday.
Thanks. So I want to beat them. I'm always in competition. Pasuk Daled. So those were the first three sons of David. Baravi, and the fourth child, his name was Adoniah ben Chagit. Vachamishi, and the fifth one is Shafatya ben Avital. And you can say, well, okay, what's the significance of any of these kids? There's not really any Mepharshim over here, but it's interesting to note that the fifth child, Shafatya, Mepharshim say that the great Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, he was a direct descendant of this fifth child of David. I'm not sure how they figure that out, but that's a fact. Vashishi, and this will be the last pasuk, but there's a little bit on it. Vashishi, the sixth child, Yitzram, Egla Ashes David. Never heard of this woman, but the child's name was Yisram, and the name of David's wife was Egla. Ela, we'll get back to that in a second. Ela, you'll do with David Bechavram. These are the children, the six sons that David had in Hebron. So, let's look in Rashi over here. Maybe Rashi will help us out. Who is Egla? I've never heard of a woman by that name before.
She was the first wife, wasn't she?
Oh, that's what we're going to see. That's what Rashi, the Radak's going to say. Says Rashi, Egla zu Michal, shehoisa chaviva olav. Michal, who's not here yet, Michal is still in enemy hands, but eventually, we're going to see in the middle of this parak, brilliantly, David is going to get her back for some reason, which we're going to see. We'll see next week. And but right now, it's only talking about what will happen. This did not yet happen. We're saying in Hebron, eventually he will have Michal will eventually come back, and they will eventually have a beautiful son by the name of Yisram. Now it's interesting the name of choice of why she's called Egla, because an Egla is a cow or a calf, right? You don't want to call your wife a cow. That would probably
calf isn't good either.
She'd have a cow. That doesn't go well either, I guess. Now, some of the Mepharshim explain the significance of a small baby cow is a term of endearment, similar to the way that people nowadays call a person, oh, you're my baby, right? Doesn't mean you're my baby, but it means that this is like someone that I love and I care for and is extremely endearing to me. In those days, apparently, that was a compliment. Nowadays, I would not recommend calling a woman a cow. Right, well, in those days, a little cow was cuter, apparently, right? They love being called a cow. Anyway, the Radak explains this a little bit differently, which we already touched upon. Well, Egla, what does it mean that her name was Egla Ashes David? Because it's interesting, if you look at the other women, they were not called Ashes David, only she. Why? So, the Radak, which I only underline two parts of it, Darshu Rizal, or Rabbeinu Zichrono Levracha, say, Egla, the Talmud says, that this is Zumichal Bas Sha'ol. Okay, we're going to see the significance of the fact that she's connected to Sha'ol. the idea we're going to see, I'll just give you a backdrop of why he's going to want her back. Obviously, he loves her very, very much. But in addition to that, those people who showed allegiance to Shaul and Ishbosheth by bringing her back to David, David was kind of giving, conveying a message that I can be a king, that's on one side, and I'm not really ignoring the power and the chain of command from Shaul because this is Shaul's daughter who's now married to me. So it's not, it's like getting the best of both worlds is what he's going to try to accomplish, and he's very successful, and we'll see, unfortunately, next week. But the Radak then says, skipping a line, Ki lam amar elzos eishes David, mashul amar al hachron hacheros. Why is only Michal called the eishes David? Elefi shahayis eisho rishona. Because as you said, she was the first, like in cornflakes, the original and the best, right? So when it comes to the first, she was the one, she was the eishes David. And all the others are come at a distant second to David. But she was always the first. And of course, Michal was not around for many years because he had to flee. But fortunately, as we'll see later on,
David married her to some, and Saul married her
to someone else. And we're going to end up seeing, we'll end up seeing that individual who happened to be a tremendous tzaddik. He's going to end up coming about later on in Pasuk Tet Zayin. His name is Paltiel Ben Laish. And he's going to be a tremendous tzaddik who never laid a finger on Michal. But that's something which unfortunately we'll see next week. God willing, we're going to start on time next week, so this way we'll be able to cover more ground. Thank you for coming, and have a great day.